One of the really strange and wonderful things about being a Unitarian Universalist minister is that the sermon titled, Should We Fear Religion, doesn't have an obvious answer to the people coming into the church. In almost any other religious organization, you would have a clear knowledge that the answer would be no. Religion is the great thing, the great force of meaning in our lives that brings us together and binds us together, and it's nothing but positive. Well, I would assume that at least half of you came in with this title going, well, he's probably going to be speaking against all of the dangers of religion because Unitarian Universalists are very aware that religion is not for amateurs. It should only be handled by professionals, and particularly when politicians get a hold of it, it's like a child playing with a loaded weapon. Unitarian Universalists understand, as we have either read the Bible or heard of it, that it's filled with violence and intolerance, and if you actually read the book, you have the history of warring tribes and angry gods, and in both Hebrew scriptures and in the Christian scriptures, of a lot of violence, a lot of intolerance, a lot of hatred, all justified under the color of religion. One of the things that and it's an occupational hazard, I suppose, that people will come up from either side and kind of charge me with, well, how would you defend religion? I say, I'm a Unitarian Universalist. I don't have to defend religion. I can look at the things that religions have done and how they have been used and misused as the casus belli for so many wars, so much oppression, from those biblical battles to the internecine killing that went on in the early Christian church between over theological issues that were no conceivable true interest to anyone other than having to be right and the other person having to be wrong, to the Inquisition, to the Crusades, to all of the intolerance that we see in religions past, present, and I think we can anticipate future. So maybe we just ought to get rid of the whole thing and adjourn for the day and just have coffee and talk to each other, because coffee and conversation will obviously lead to peace and fellowship and reconciliation. That's not the lesson of history either. Now, I want to be the last person to be tarred with what I'm about to say, and unfortunately it is being recorded, but maybe this section won't work. The NRA is right. Religions don't kill people. People kill people. Religions are used as the organizing principle, as the uniform that we identify the sides. There have been plenty of monsters who have killed with tremendous abandon that were not coming out of a religious perspective. From Stalin to Mao, arguably Hitler was a nationalist, was not going under the cover of Christianity. Racial purity, that's another way that we kill each other. Ethnicity and race and nationalism. All of these are forces that human beings use and misuse as an organizing principle to whip up the troops. Now, people say, but religion is unique in that religion has a sense of absolutism. Well, religions tend to have a sense of absolutism that is absolutely dangerous. That's true. But so do secular systems. There were many purges within the Communist Party from the Mensheviks through the Bolsheviks, through the assassination of Trotsky, If you want to get a really good fight going, though it seldom comes to actual blows, get two psychoanalysts to sit down with each other and talk about Freud, Jung, and Adler, and that holy trinity, and that unholy hell that will come from that. Although usually it doesn't come to actual violence, because by the time...
Just
sarcasm and hostility, which had something to do with their mothers, I'm sure of that. The point being that all human beings can find the reason and the rationalization to hate our sisters and our brothers, literally the members of our family. One of the things that has served America well, and where I come back to the topic was of should we fear religion? And my answer, incidentally, is yes, but. Yes, we should fear religion when religions become united in one view and one orthodoxy. Diversity and tension and pluralism have been the landmarks of this nation and have helped it to steer a path, not perfectly, but well, through the terrible waters of religious wars from which the founding fathers came. They were very influenced and traumatized, deeply aware of what was going on and what had gone on in Europe, where church and state were united. When the churches were the organizing principles and the rationalizations for civil wars that are famously uncivil, for conflicts, for purges, for witch burning, for hysteria, for the persecution of all non-Orthodox, and non-Orthodox being whatever it was that the king was not. And that was a terribly instructive model to the founders of this country. They believed in tension. They believed in not having resolution. That's why we have three branches of government, because no one branch is supposed to dominate. They should be checks and balances. That's why the separation of church and state is not simply, as it is taken by so many, to mean, well, the religious shouldn't interfere in statecraft. Well, most Americans consider themselves to be religious, and every religious person has a right to interfere in statecraft, but as an individual, not as the voice of God. But what the founders were more interested in was that the government not align itself with one particular official endorsed faith, because that unifying of God and state could only lead, they didn't have the word, but to fascism. It's very important that we understand the importance of pluralism in terms of religion. It is a wonderful thing in this congregation that I personally know we have a huge spectrum of theologies, of people who find the word God offensive, find it useless, who find it useful, who find it important, who find it central. And we do not have to think alike in order to love alike. The tension in our government, the diversity in our society have only helped us to stay in dynamic tension. My anxiety, and what brings about this sermon title today, is that there are very strong voices working for a single evangelical Christian view. Now, there's nothing wrong with evangelicals. There is something wrong with evangelizing, which is central to what evangelicals are. Now, I know this is a little elegant, but I will get to what I mean, because it doesn't have to be a contradiction. What brought this to mind so clearly and so strongly in the last couple of weeks was the problem, which I believe is a scandal, that's going on at the Air Force Academy in Colorado, where there has been essentially a cultural coup by evangelicals who have been not simply harassing, trying to convert, putting down, and attempting to humiliate Jews, but non-evangelicals, Catholics, and people of Christian background who were not born again. This is an example of something that I think is very dangerous. It is the idea that there is one true religiosity, one true view, that if we all take it in together, we will be better and stronger and more disciplined. That this, in the microcosm of the Air Force Academy, could be taking place is truly disturbing on very many levels. One is that it is an example of the intolerance, which is a contradiction of the essential message of the Good News, by the way, but the intolerance that so many evangelicals seem to show in their lives. It is also chastening, that, but not surprising, that the Air Force Academy and the Air Force is attempting to minimize it and cover it up. When an investigation was ordered, the chaplain who confirmed the abuse was transferred to Japan. Now, the Air Force Academy spokesman said that that was a routine transfer and it wasn't punitive. I would love to see that done with his hand on the Bible under penalty of perjury. It is, on the face of it, nonsense. They don't like looking bad. Who does like looking bad? But what is so dangerous about this is that if the Air Force Academy cadets, the elite of the Air Force in our military, can intimidate and humiliate people who do not believe exactly as they believe, what chance do the enlistees have against a passionate, convicted, fundamentalist officer corps? If they can intimidate other cadets who have connections and education and are presumably articulate and they are frightened, when these people come into command positions with a mostly lower quartile education, socioeconomically, level of grunt, what chance do they have against that kind of command authority? It's very disturbing. The superintendent of the Air Force Academy said, I have a problem with my cadet corps. I have issues with my own staff. And that pretty much includes the entire program. That's his admission. This is, in isolation, a problem that presumably we can wrestle with and handle as a society. But as an issue, it is to be taken very seriously. One, in terms of the military. We do not need an officer corps of holy warriors, even if those warriors hold holy the same things that we do, which I doubt. But even if they did, the unifying of religion and the military is, to me, a clearer and more present danger today than the issue of separation of church and state. We see, and this is where religion becomes dangerous, we see what happens with the Islamic jihadists, the holy warriors who fight for the greater glory of God and will kill you and me and their own cousins and brothers and relatives to that cause, because God will sort them out later and there'll be divine justice. our emphasis here is on creating justice in this world. We see the same problem, frankly, with the ultra-Orthodox in Israel, who have great intolerance for people who do not believe exactly the same as they. And both the jihadists and the ultra-Orthodox, and to some extent potentially the evangelicals, have the same problem, and this is the danger in religion. Religions are bad at politics. Politicians may be good at manipulating religion, but religions, fundamentalist religions, are bad at politics because they can't negotiate. If I have my marching orders from God, if God gave this land to me, or if God gave this land to him, or if God commanded me to save these souls and burn these bodies, how can I possibly negotiate any kind of compromise? I'm not authorized to compromise on behalf of God. What's going on in the Middle East today has been, to some extent, two sides fighting about who's got the holy land grant from God. And how can I could give you my house. I could leave my territory. I could move elsewhere, but I'm doing God's work here. That's a step that takes away individual responsibility, and it is a step that makes it impossible to do politics, which is the art of compromise. That's the great danger of religion. It's true or it's false. My God and my God's message is true or it's all nonsense. That kind of fatal alternatives are too often fatal to human beings. When I look at the statement, you are on God's side or you are against it, or you are against God, it is fundamentally the same as saying you're on, and that's the message of the fundamentalist religious of all faiths, you are on the people's side or you are against the people. That's essentially the Marxist position. You are on the side of the state or you are against the state. That's essentially the fascist position. They're the same statements. And what they have in common is they brook no dissent. There is one truth, one orthodoxy, one interpretation, and that is a dangerous idea. Religion, at the heart of it, we should be wary of people who carry passionate truths, who are willing to give your all for their cause and their great truth. It can be secular, it can be religious, it can be in any kind of form or color, but we are particularly sensitive to how religion has been misused because of the difficulty of negotiating with it. Religion itself, the enemy, not in its best sense. One of the things that always confuses people when they start attacking religion and expect me to be defending it is they have a definition of what religion is that I don't. Religion is not what it is that God says to you. Religion is what we do with each other. It's what motivates us. It is the help and the support and the love and the community. It isn't in trying to make everyone the same. When we sang our hymns this morning, we have gathered side by side, circle of kinship. We seek to be kind. We seek to be supportive. We don't seek as individuals or as a community to have one right point of view, one theology, or even, despite what many think, one political creed. We are far more diverse than we think we are. And that's a good thing. That we live in a state of tension, that's a good thing. There should be, in my view, never a final victory for any one faith, for any one political system or philosophy or ideology. We only grow when we are challenged to think, to engage each other, to model respectfully the inherent dignity that we claim to see in the other. Evangelicals have to evangelize. It's a tenet of their faith. They do not have to harass and bully with pride and arrogance. If they want to evangelize, they should evangelize in what I think the best way to evangelize, and that includes all of us here. And that is model humane behavior that is so admirable that people are drawn to join you. That's how you evangelize. Not by browbeating, not by arguing, not by humiliating, but by living a good and decent, a generous and caring life with each other and with this world.